I have been looking forward to this lesson. Children and youth may go to their Sunday school classes. The rest of us, we will be turning to Romans chapter 12. And forgive me before, but I want to greet our guest. Thank you for joining us this morning. It's a pleasure having you. Sonia, it's always great to see you. We are continuing our lessons in Romans. This is our 69th lesson, but this is our fifth part of unfeigned love. All right, Romans 12, starting in verse 9, it reads, "Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, and honor preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another, mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." Brother Lou, will you pray for our Sunday school class this morning? Amen. You may be seated. So, like I said, I've been very much looking forward to this one because I want to address one of our favorite misconceptions today, and we'll get to that in due time. But we have been looking at Romans, and we have been looking at chapter 12, and chapter 12 has a significant shift from, pardon my language, but I hope you understand where I'm going, a theological diatribe to the application of what we should be doing with the knowledge that we have learned before. In other words, Paul has said through chapters 1 through 11, this is who God is, and chapter 12 now is, this is what you are supposed to be doing with what I have told you. And that phrase is simply this, it is a reasonable service to be a living sacrifice. And I find it to be a very reasonable sacrifice if I get to determine how much of a living sacrifice I get to be. If it's one or two times, I'm very happy with it, but the fact that it's a continual living sacrifice doesn't always sit well with me. And I have said it a few times during the past, especially 5 weeks, where we've been looking at unfeigned love. My toes have been stepped on so much. And I've been very candid about there are things that I do not like because it requires my submission. And if submission was easy, it wouldn't be the topic of most churches this morning all across the nation. But our living sacrifice is not possible if at first our mind is not changed. And we have looked at it before, so I'm not going to beat on it too long, just long enough, is that our mindset has to be changed from the carnal fallen state to get back into realignment with what he has declared to be right. And we had looked at that as sober thinking. Sober thinking is proper thinking that is not impaired. We think of sober as the connotation is typically drinking. When you drink, you're no longer sober because your brain no longer functions as it's supposed to. So a brain that is functioning as it is supposed to, not our definition of a supposed to, but as God has created to have proper relationship with him. And part of that is our mind submitting to him and seeing things as he sees things, submitting to him so that he can change our motives. Because we can't change our motives. We can't. As much as we try, we change your behaviors, we change your actions. And if we don't allow him to change our thinking, even the actions that we change will not have the result that we want. It doesn't matter how nice I am to someone, if I'm doing it just because I've been told to be nice, it doesn't mean I'm nice. As a kid, I can tell you how many times I was told it's nice to share. I will share just enough to not get in trouble. And as soon as mom turns away, I am going to make my cousin's life miserable. Accidentally. And part of this proper mindset allows some very important things. First, it allows us to separate from that which is evil and cling to that which is good. But we have to cut it off. And I use the example of if we just put what our favorite sin is just out of reach, it's very easy to constantly go back to it. Well, it's not, I'm not touching it, Lord. It's in the seat next to me. It's fine. It's okay. It's not part of me. But as long as I can reach out and touch my favorite sin, life is good. And that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about removing it completely and getting away from it and instead entwining that which is good and just to prevent anybody from saying that they can pick what's good. What our definition of good is not what God has declared as good. So we are to cleave what he declares is right, not what a majority of us think might be good. If you go outside the doors, the definition of what is good in society nowadays is far different than what was good 5 years ago, versus 10 years ago, versus 50 years ago. But what he has declared as good has never changed, and that is the standard to what we should be cleaving to. We should be cleaving to him and his goodness. And being underneath that same mind allows us to be part of the body of Christ where he is the mind, where he is the head of the body. Because if we get to our own thinking, we start fighting with everybody else who doesn't have quite the same mindset, and it creates general issues inside the body.
Could I have you kill that projector?
Thank you. Sorry, I keep seeing it out of the corner of my eye, so it throws me off. So I'm sure it's probably messing with you as well. But part of having the mindset of God is the proper functioning in the body, but it's not just the day-to-day function. There's gifts that are given that each one of us has to do. And I don't know if there's been a theme in the past couple weeks, not just myself, but the messages we heard is we all have a role to play in the body, and it is not my job to fill your role and not mine. I don't get to pick and choose what my role of the body is. My hand can't suddenly say, you know what, I want to be a foot. It has a job and function to be a foot, and if it stops fulfilling the role of being a hand, it's no longer doing what I need it to do, and I'm pretty sure I confused the words, but you know what I meant, is our body has to function properly, and we can't do that unless we're sharing his mind. And the last thing is, when he changes our motives, we have his fruit. And something that has been beaten to me, and I hope I've brought across, is as we look at each example of how we should have love, it has to be in accordance with what he has declared good and in his mindset, not ours. Because each one of these things that we've gone over, I find my own loopholes. And this is where my feet have been stepped on, is when I step back and say what he has declared about it, those loopholes are closed. And I find I went from a size 14 to a size 13 over the past few weeks. Before I leave, I might be stealing Keegan's shoes and walking out of here. Because there is no loophole as much as my carnal mind cries for it and screams for it. Now, I'm not going to go through all of them. If you want to, feel free to go look at YouTube or wherever we have them stored. But I do want to jump in at verse 14, and this may or may not be the last week. I see us coming shortly to the end of chapter 12. But it says, "Bless them which persecute you." This just adds to the list of things that I don't like. And to persecute doesn't mean someone who offends you. It means someone who's actively engaging in opportunities or pursuing you. And that word "bless" means to speak life. And we looked at it in previous weeks. And you can't speak life unless you have right relationship with him. You can't speak life if you don't have life in you. And none of us have life in us inherently. Oh, we might point to examples where we showed love because it's family or friends or because they gave us stuff or demonstrated love to us first, but we don't speak life unless he is dwelling in us. Bless and curse not. You know, that's just not limited to those who persecute you. That's a very short bless and curse not. There is no qualifier. It's not saying those who persecute you now. This is just talking in your everyday life, speak life, period. That might be harder than speaking life to those that persecute you. Because it's not just speaking life to others, it's also speaking life to ourselves. And how do we speak life to ourselves? Is it talking to ourselves and mumbling? Well, only when I'm fixing the car or I'm doing stuff around the house. No, that's mumbling and complaining. That's not speaking life. But are we actually putting in? That's part of our speaking life. Are we preparing ourselves by putting the proper things in so when time comes, we are able to demonstrate? In other words, are we filling ourselves up so that we have the ability to speak life when it is necessary? And last week, we looked at rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them weep. And this is part of speaking life, is being able to share in the joys and the sorrows of other people. It is not rejoicing in another's misfortune. It is not being jealous and petty when someone gets something that you wanted, which, quite frankly, probably would have destroyed you, which is why you didn't get it. We should be so thankful we don't get half the things we ask for. We don't need to be spoiled brats in his kingdom. You know, part of that is bearing one another's burden. And people know when that's true and when it's fake. Oh, yeah, congratulations. You didn't mean that. And I use the example of when someone's just there and says, "I haven't gone through this, but it hurts me because you're hurting." You don't have to have the words, but just demonstrate the care that people have. This is especially true now, post-COVID world, is we want to live in a bubble. People still live in a bubble and have fears of going out and interacting with people. I don't like my notes for the next part, and I want to skip them. But how does that bubble apply to us? We try and be Christians in a bubble. I know I'm guilty of it. If I can just get busy enough in his kingdom, then I don't have to worry about rejection. I don't have to worry about getting involved with anybody. And the reason I don't like these notes is because this is why persecution, I believe, is so successful to the church. Because it forces us to demonstrate him when we refuse to do it on our own. What are we waiting for? Again, I'm stepping on my own toes, so don't think I'm beating on anyone else. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. You know, how do you get to the same mind one toward another? Well, everybody's my friend. I don't have any enemies. Right? I just don't hang around them, and I'm okay with them. I just don't interact with people I don't have that kinship with. You know, that'd be great if we took the loophole that it's supposed to be our mind one to another. It's supposed to be his mind. Again, the reason I go back is because I want to skip and take it out of context, but in context, all of this requires us to have the mind of Christ and demonstrate love in accordance with his example. And I don't see him sending people away. They're hungry, feed them. Bring the children to me. I don't see him cringing from those who had sin. Instead, he said, this is an opportunity that you can see that I am the Lamb and this is my love. And we are supposed to be Christ-like. But we were looking for the loophole of saying, well, it's our mind. God is just working on me. Yeah, God's working on you, but that is not an excuse to do whatever we want. Right. Mind not high things. In case you missed it, think of everyone the same. That includes yourself. Don't get too proud of yourself. Don't think you're high-minded. Don't think you're all that in a bag of chips. You're not the best thing since sliced bread. Looking back, penicillin is probably the best thing since sliced bread. It was the same year. It was mass-produced 30 years later. That's better than sliced bread. You're not. Part of that mind, the same mind toward everyone, is realizing you're part of that everyone. That is nothing of ourselves. I don't stand here in front of you today because I'm anything. It's because God wants me here. I am more than happy to sit in a pew. Flat out. I take less beatings that way. I get beat all week reading through this. So when I say I step on my own toes, I'm not just saying it for your amusement. I'm saying it because it is a consistent beating looking through Scripture, because it's what he wants me to do. It is him showing where I still have to submit to him. It's hard to think greater than yourself if you keep your eyes on him. Condescend to men of low estate. Well, doesn't Paul just say right here that there's men lower than you, if there's men in low estate that we're supposed to condescend to? Loophole. Not at all. It means stop pretending you have any privilege. And if you have any privilege, you get rid of it. And low estate are those who are close to the ground. That means humble, grounded. We are supposed to be humble. And part of that humble is recognizing that he is God and I am not, and that I am no different than anyone else other than his mercy and grace on my life. And that does not make me better than anyone else. If anything, that puts more weight on my shoulders, because I should be a servant to demonstrate his love to everyone else. And I would love to say, I've been saved, I am scot-free, I can do whatever I want now. Oh, I am free, but I am free to live for my King. And I'm not going to get into it again, but there's a problem when we get to the thinking of it like a job and not an opportunity to serve our King. You can go back and listen, I think it's 2 or 3 lessons ago, to my self-pity, but that's enough of that for today. And then we get to recompense no man evil for evil. That recompense doesn't mean it's questionable. It means when they clearly deserve it. You are not to pay back evil. But don't you understand? I got the facts. They're guilty. They deserve this. There's no question. I got it on video. I got three people who saw it. I can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt that this is their wages. This is what they're due. Bless and curse not. But you don't understand what they owe me. They owe me for what they have done. Be very careful. That phrase that we throw around, judge not lest you be judged, doesn't mean stop judging me. That is our rule, that we don't become judgmental. Because like the servant that was owed something, do we think we want to go out and try and pick what everybody owes us and yet completely gloss over the debt we have to our Creator? My shoes are getting looser here. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Provide doesn't mean if the opportunity comes along. Provide is a thoughtful diligence. It means to prepare for it, to give diligence, to work toward it, to use the phrase from Paul, to press toward the mark, to be ready at any time, to live like Christ. If we ever think we are going to rise to the occasion, but we've never prepared for it, it's not going to happen. Don't tell me you're going to climb Mount Everest if you've never even gone to the peak over here in Stafford. Okay? That's the kind of thinking. Oh, I've never climbed a mountain before. And I can give you an example, and Bishop will remember this, is we went to Machu Picchu. And then they have Huayna Picchu, which is 1,000 feet higher. I don't hike. That's self-evident. I decided I'm going to hike this. I got to the point where they had a gate for small people that I couldn't get through, and I turned around and came back. But not before becoming so dehydrated that when I took water, I threw up. And I remember being on the train or bus ride back the entire time with my head down saying, what a stupid, stupid choice. I will say I've gotten a great story out of it, but what a stupid choice. What was I thinking? Well, I'll just rise to the occasion. It looks like a great thing. And how often do we think that in our Christian lives? Oh, don't worry, when persecution comes, I'll be right there. Well, if you can't live for Him when there's no persecution, what makes you think you're prepared for when trouble comes? When you've done nothing to prepare, if you have done nothing to put Him in here, when the time comes, there is nothing you're going to take out of the tank because there's nothing left. There's nothing there. And I can tell you, we will never have His fruit if we're running on empty. And each one of these things that we looked at, if we're running on empty, we will never be able to do it in accordance with what He wants if we never know what He wants. So as we look at the last four verses, these are the previous items that we have to keep in mind. First, speak life. Bless and curse not. Rejoice and mourn with others as demonstration of His love, and it is not only His body. Think properly toward all men, and men in the generic sense. All of humanity, sober thinking, His thinking. And even when we have full justification to repay with evil, don't. And finally, live honestly. And I'm not just trying to drill those over and over and over to fill enough time that you guys can have snack at an appropriate time. But it's important because I found that it was important for me to understand the weight of the next section, because it all builds. It says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. The NLT says, do all that you can do. A couple things. That tells me it's not always going to be possible to live peaceably. I do find shortcoming with the NLT translation. So as much as I like the do everything you can do, it falls short of the translation because what lieth in you? Is it you doing everything you can to avoid? Or do we have him in us so that we can live peaceably? I've said it before and I'll say it again. Humanity by itself in a fallen state is not peaceable. The only thing that allows peace is the concern for repercussion. We call it laws, but the truth is the reason we don't just grab and take whatever we want is because we are worried about repercussions. And that's the carnal right there. When you don't worry about the repercussions, you end up with emperors and conquerors and Genghis Khan and raiders and Vikings and you on and on and on and on throughout history. As much as lieth from you, that means out of or from you. And living peaceably is cultivating and keeping peace. We should not be the antagonist. Proverbs 16:6 through 9 says, by mercy and truth, iniquity is purged, and by the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil. When a man's way please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. A man's heart deviseth his ways, but the Lord directeth his steps. And again, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. And this is in accordance with what he declares to be right. He came revealing himself. He did what was right. And he was persecuted for it. Good offends people. Does that mean we stop doing good? Not at all. But we have to remember, we do not wield the sword. We hold a shield and we stand. There is a clear difference between offense and defense. We are not to be offensive Christians. And I want to point out there is a clear difference between offending with truth to reveal our heart's motive or being offended by truth, which demonstrates what's in the heart of the hearer. Plainly put is, do we speak truth in love? if we're out here wielding a sword, swinging it back and forth, I dare say we're not using his word as love. The whole point of offense is to damage someone so that they will no longer do anything to you. That's the point of offense. That's part of the arms race. I don't want to use it, but I want the threat of using it to be so incredible that you wouldn't even think twice to raise your hand to me. Are we too often like that with his word? It is different than standing for the truth saying, no, I know what is right, and I will demonstrate it upon the value of my own life, even if that means my life is forfeit. It is true. Do we speak truth in love? And I don't think the heaviness of what Paul wrote was lost upon him, because his next two words are dearly beloved. I don't know if anybody has any opportunity talking to their children about a serious matter, and you're talking to them, and then you get to the point where you say, listen, I need you to understand, I love you very much, so what I'm saying is not because I'm mad at you, but because I really need you to listen to the words that are coming out of my mouth. I am saying it from a place of love because I want you to do the right thing. And I can't help but get the same feeling that this is what Paul is saying here. He's saying, look, I understand the instructions here are rough, they're contrary, they're hard to take in, but it comes from a place of love so that you can demonstrate his love. Because those instructions to us, they're hard. They're rough. If we truly sit down and think what it means, they are not easy. Avenge not yourselves. Do not take it on yourselves to judge. Matthew 7:1, judge not that ye be not judged. In Romans 2:1, therefore thou art inexcusable, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest, for wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself, for thou that judgest doest the same things. And not just action. Fake love stops at not doing anything physically to that person or pretending to love them. Fake love builds up resentment and feelings against the person who did something against you. Well, I'm not really avenging from what they did. Yeah, but are you withholding love for them because you think something different? Are you not giving them what they are due? Yeah, but I'm not avenging them. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Then you don't have love. My Savior willingly went. I don't like it either. The feelings you're feeling, trust me, I'm feeling them. I am thankful that he went as a sheep to the slaughter, but that means I have to as well. I don't like it. I can't even build up resentment toward them. Yeah, but if they don't know I resent them, let's not be so foolish as to think we don't know when people resent us. Don't worry, we got a loophole coming, right? But rather give place unto wrath. Oh, doesn't that justify my being able to just start saving things up? Don't worry, God's going to take care of it if I can't. Oh, yeah. We think that, don't we? I do, so I know we do. It's okay. God will take care of them in the end. Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, I feel my carnality going, yeah, preach it, brother. God's going to get them. Vengeance is not ours. It's His power. He is the judge. And if we think that God is waiting up there with a baseball bat to avenge us because we don't like something, then we've missed everything that has come before from verse 1:1 through the end of chapter 11. We miss the God who has come and revealed Himself as the Lamb who is merciful and gracious if we think of Him waiting to avenge us. If we think of a God that's waiting to jump on everyone else, we've missed Him. And that's fake love. All have been written into the book of life. So, this is going to be our question of the day here. Who are we to try and force Him to erase someone else's name? He put all the names in there. He gives the opportunity. He demonstrates His lordship and grace. Who are we to try and force His hand to take names out? Who are we to go before the Lord and say, Lord, don't you know what they did to me? Aren't you going to exact wrath and vengeance on my sake here? One, wrong thinking. And two, if anybody has justification for wrath, it is Him who revealed Himself, who was crucified by His creation, and His example says, no, I will suffer for them, for the opportunity that they have right relationship. And we think we can jump the line and force God to do what we want because we're not happy? A little conceited, isn't it? That goes against speaking life. That goes against blessing. That goes against rejoicing with rejoicing. That goes against weeping with weeping. That's repaying evil with evil. Well, Lord, don't you understand? We didn't act upon it. We just held resentment because we were just waiting for You to be a full condemning judge. Don't you understand? When I read the book for what they're supposed to do, you should be angry too. Time out here. We've said it before. We read Scripture to see Him and what I have to do. It's not what Lou has to do. It's not what Don has to do. It's not what anybody else has to do. I'm reading for what I have to do to be in submission, in right relationship with my God. Still no loophole. And we get to the conclusion of the matter in the last two verses. Therefore, everything leads up to this. If thine enemy hunger, feed him. Well, he's the bread of life. Stop with the loophole. That means if he's hungry now, you feed them now. But they're thirsty. But he's the fountain of living water. Yes, demonstrate him. But if they're thirsty now, you give them something to drink and you demonstrate what living water is. If they're hungry, you feed them and you demonstrate what the bread of life is, but because he's working in you that you don't hold them as enemies. For in so doing, best part right here, I get to put coals on them. That's why I got my shovel. Don't worry, I washed it so there shouldn't be too much dirt. But if I do all those things, I got my shovel here, and I don't want to do physical labor, but if I get to just start throwing coals on my enemies, I'm in. I'll work for free. Day off, I'll be right there. And how much of our thinking is we carry this around with us saying, ooh, if I can use God's love, then I can heap coals on everyone else's head. I finally found the loophole. I can demonstrate God's love. And I know he's not going to give wrath, but it says here, I get to weep coals on everybody. Do you know how excited I am? I've been waiting for the loophole. We found it. We're good. I got my shovel. I was so excited today. I made sure I cleaned it yesterday so I could bring it this morning so that we can find some coals and start spreading them around. You know the problem with that? This doesn't weigh that much, but I am tired of holding it. You know what a pain this is to walk around for 40 minutes with this in my hand? I mean, luckily I'm used to talking with my hand, so it's just an extra thing. But trying to flip and open my water bottle, this gets tiresome. Boy, I wish my energies could be used elsewhere. If I could use those energies to reach them instead of waiting for an opportunity to show love via hot coals. You know, this is a quote from Proverbs 25, 21 to 22. If thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he be thirsty, give him water to drink, for thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee. Boom! I got it. Loophole found. Because if I go and finish the quote, it says God's going to reward me for heaping coals on people. Game, set, match, I win. I found it. You know, the problem with that word shall reward thee, it means recompense. I will pay you back. So, if I take the carnality out of it, I start losing the energy to carry this around. Because the recompense isn't me reading for the other person. I am reading it for me. So if I don't feed my enemy, if I don't give my enemy to drink, then I am holding the sins of the enemy up before the Lord, saying, look what they did to me. And the Lord will pay thee back. If you're not going to forgive them, why should I forgive your debt, which is so many times more greater, if you won't forgive theirs? Loophole is closed, isn't it? If we do this with fake love, we use his word to fulfill our self-need for vengeance. But if we do this with love, it'll be like a smoldering coal to those we want to reach. I don't want them to burn, and I don't think that's a connotation. There's some argument about it, but I'm going to go Phil speak here for a bit, so feel free to go through and read for yourselves. But that heaping of coals, that's going to be on their conscience. Because we all love justifying our behavior. Now, if I go over and I just kick Lou as hard as I can in his shin, and I got square-toe boots, so they're going to make a mark, and Lou gets up and hits me, see, he had it in him. He deserved the kick because he was going to hit me. That's the kind of person he is. He deserves to get hit because he was going to hit me. I just did it first just so everybody could see his true character. Now, what instead? I do the same thing to Lou. Where he says, I forgive you and I love you and it has true love in it. What do I do when I no longer can blame someone else for my actions? Oh, I might tell my friends, you know, if I just did it a little bit harder, I would have gotten the real Lou to come out. If I was just a little bit meaner, I might have gotten the reaction that I wanted. If I was a little more harsh, and those are great until we come to the quiet, still place, and we have that burning, and realize that it's something within ourselves. That's what a burning coal is. A burning coal wants to spark a fire. It's got heat. It just sizzles. Now, if we do that with the, yeah, I'll show you, then we missed it. But if we do it to demonstrate God's lordship, he can use that as an opportunity to reach the aggressor. Because they have no justification and have to come with terms of, where does that come from? Where did that part that I don't like come from? And it provides an opportunity for God to deal with them. But we'll never have that if we do not have God's mind, and if we do not have his love, we will never get to the place where we make a difference in his kingdom. And Paul ends it with, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. That brings you right back to verse 2, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You will never overcome evil with good if you don't have his mindset of good and you're not deliberately putting good in here. We don't have it. You don't fight a fire with an empty fire extinguisher. Without obedience to his word and having our mind transformed, we will not be changed, we will not overcome, and we will never have the ability to separate ourselves from that which is evil and cling to good. We must be changed to bear his fruit, and it starts with motives which demonstrate his love in our lives. We have to stop with the mindset of we will do it, and when we fall short, he will do it. Say that again. We will do it, and we will fall short, he will do it. I'll make it more personal. I'm going to do it, and if I can't, God will do it. We have to get away from that mindset. When we look at it, what it reveals about who we are is that I am going to do it by what I am. And then, if I fall short, then I'll let God take over. Instead, we have to stand in right position before Him from the very beginning and say, Lord, where do I go? And we go with Him. He is the focus. And then if we are going where He wants us to go, when we don't have the strength, it's okay because it was never your strength in the first place. It was your weakness that demonstrates just how good He is to accomplish His goal. He knows that you're short. And I don't mean stature. He knows where you're weak. He knows where you can't make it. He knows exactly where our shortcomings are, and those are opportunities for Him to demonstrate to the world how big of a God He is. And when we look at all these things and we see points where we don't have it, it is an opportunity to submit that part of our lives to Him. It is not to feel bad and cry at the altar and go home and feel justified for the week that I feel really bad and I told God I'm sorry. It is, you are my Lord, and if I'm going to continue in right standing with you, those things need to be cut off. You're showing me what needs to be changed, Lord. Let me give it to you to change. Do you turn it over to Him? Do I turn it over to Him? I'm not asking you to answer my question, but your question is, when He puts the spotlight on that part of our lives, do we truly turn it over to Him? Or do we try and say, Lord, I'm sorry, just take the spotlight off that arm for a little bit, maybe tuck it behind our back so He doesn't see it. And when I don't feel convicted about it, I can stick my arm back out where it was and I feel great about my life. Absolutely. Neil, is the mic up here? Okay.
Does that help change your relationship with Him? It didn't change Him, but it changed you.
Yeah.
Because He didn't give you what you would have given.
Thank you.